or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Corrine, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the July 27th, 2026 issue of the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Thank you for joining us today. The highlights under business and finance are: NVIDIA is in talks to provide a roughly $250 billion backstop for OpenAI as part of a massive data center project, one of the most ambitious financial transactions yet in America's AI boom. United Airlines, hunting for a mega deal, last year approached Delta about a merger that would have combined the two most valuable U.S. carriers. A shift toward more hiring is emerging across U.S. industries, from railroads to tech, as companies plan to add workers to meet growth goals or to seize on emerging technologies. Stocks face major tests this week from tech earnings and the Fed's interest rate decision against a backdrop of notable declines over the previous 2 weeks. David Fox, who helped build Kirkland and Ellis into a top law firm, now sees artificial intelligence as the profession's future. A surge in popularity of Hasbro's Magic card game has bucked the trend of declining sales of traditional toys, energizing the company. Spirits maker Sazerac sent a letter to a group of Brown for Men shareholders asking them to reconsider a $15 billion buyout offer that was rebuffed. Elon Musk's tunneling startup, The Boring Company, is in talks to raise new funding that would value it at around $20 billion. More businesses are transferring claims to tariff refunds they might be due as they grow concerned that payouts may not, in fact, appear. Now for the key articles under the Worldwide section. Trump put off an escalation of his military campaign against Iran amid efforts to revive diplomacy to open the Strait of Hormuz in a debate over the impact of declining munitions stocks. Attacks between Saudi Arabia and Houthi rebels in Yemen are escalating, threatening to break a fragile truce that has held for 4 years. Former Maine State Senate President Troy Jackson secured the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate following Graham Platner's decision to abandon his scandal-plagued campaign. A warning by the Wisconsin Elections Commission opened a new front in the escalating legal battle between prediction markets and the state regulators fighting to ban them. At least 40 million people were under extreme heat warnings across central and southern parts of the U.S. in conditions of high temperatures and severe humidity. India's education minister resigned, handing the country's youth movement a victory and showing the growing heft of protests that began months ago as online memes. Brazil denied visas to two Trump administration officials who planned to travel there amid concerns they sought to undermine confidence in the country's electronic voting system. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un called for radical enhancements to the country's military reconnaissance and intelligence capabilities, state media reported. The picture on today's front page shows a bicyclist dressed all in yellow, waving a victory sign. And that headline reads, Tour de France champion makes history. The caption, spin and win. Slovenian Tadej Pogačar, 27, rolled onto the Champs-Élysées to claim his fifth Tour de France on Sunday, making him one of only five men to win bicycling's biggest race five times. Pogačar won by 6 minutes and 26 seconds. Other articles from the front page follow. NVIDIA in talks to back OpenAI on $250 billion for data hub. The campus would require 10 gigawatts of power and take years to build. Ohio project, tied to U.S. deal, would be one of the world's largest computing centers. By Anissa Gardizi, Amrith Ramkumar, and Corey Drybush. NVIDIA is in talks to provide a roughly $250 billion backstop for OpenAI as part of a massive data center project, one of the most ambitious financial transactions yet in the artificial intelligence boom. The guarantees from NVIDIA would help the ChatGPT maker lease a 10-gigawatt project that SoftBank's energy subsidiary is developing in southern Ohio, people familiar with the matter said. In total, the project could cost more than $500 billion, including the chips that would go inside the data centers. It would be the largest data center project announced to date. The power for the project is controlled by the U.S. government and funded separately by Japan under a recent trade deal. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick is involved in deciding who will get the power, some of the people said. NVIDIA's backing would allow the data center developer, which is owned by Japanese billionaire Masayoshi Son's investment firm SoftBank, to raise debt at more favorable terms than it could if OpenAI had no financial backer. Since OpenAI has no investment-grade credit rating as an unprofitable private company, the AI company has been in advanced talks to lease the site for several weeks. People familiar with the matter said. OpenAI is among the companies that have shown most interest in the site, while Anthropic, Microsoft, and Google have also spoken to Lutnick about it in recent weeks, one of the people said. AI companies are desperate to secure chips and power needed to run their models, making mega projects that have government support or guaranteed power increasingly attractive. Under the arrangement, NVIDIA would guarantee a series of financing vehicles intended to make lenders feel more confident that the funding behind the project is secure, the people said. Terms haven't been completed, and the deal could fall apart. The guarantee of $250 billion would cover the data center lease and debt needed to fund its build-out, but not the NVIDIA chips that would go inside it. NVIDIA, which has invested $30 billion in OpenAI, is also discussing a deal to finance the chip purchase for OpenAI, which could total $350 billion, people familiar with those discussions said. Such circular funding arrangements have caused concerns that the industry is vulnerable. If investor sentiment shifts or growth slows for AI companies, the campus would require roughly 10 gigawatts of electricity, or enough to power several million homes, and take many years to complete. The first phase of the project is expected to be finished in 2028 and would have around 800 megawatts of power, according to people familiar with the deal. Lutnick and the Trump administration also have a lot riding on the Ohio project, as part of its commitment to invest in the U.S. in return for lower tariffs. Japan agreed to invest $33 billion in a natural gas power project on federal land in Ohio that would be operated by SB Energy, which is effectively controlled by SoftBank's Sun. SB Energy has received an investment from OpenAI, and SoftBank itself is one of the largest investors in OpenAI. In March, Lutnick, Sun, and Energy Secretary Chris Wright broke ground on the data center complex. By using federal land in Ohio, the government and its partners hope to avoid the permitting headaches and local opposition that are snarling data centers across the country. The project is on a decommissioned uranium enrichment site about 50 miles south of Columbus. It will still take time to complete the financing and acquire all the equipment. The U.S. government will provide a fee to SB Energy for operating the power plant, one of the people said. Japan and the U.S. will split the power sales until Japan recoups its $33 billion, after which the American government will get 90% of the revenue. The arrangement shows how the administration is trying to accelerate activity in critical industries by directly partnering with the private sector. Trump pauses plans for strikes on Iran. U.S. delays campaign amid debates over weapons supply potential for talks. By Michael R. Gordon, Meredith McGraw, Shelby Holliday, and Lara Sigelman. President Trump has put off an escalation of his military campaign against Iran amid efforts to revive diplomacy, to open the Strait of Hormuz, and a debate over the impact of declining munitions stocks, said U.S. officials familiar with the matter. The U.S. military has been poised Friday to launch a series of strikes against Iran, which could have lasted up to 2 weeks, the officials said. But the operation was delayed so diplomacy could proceed, and as officials discussed, the effects of a major attack could have on U.S.'s shrinking stocks of Patriot and other air defense interceptors. The president could still order an attack, officials said, noting that the situation remains fluid. The White House has been informed of the declining inventories of air defense interceptors by General Dan Kane, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, officials added. The issue is a concern for Kane, who believes the low inventories wouldn't preclude a resumption of major combat operations against Iran, but would add to the risk, the officials added. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Chatbots answer perilous queries. AI models know how to make biological weapons. Some will teach you. By Georgia Wells and Amrith Rampkumar. After OpenAI enhanced the brain power of its chatbot last summer, hundreds of users worldwide began asking it how to make and deploy biological weapons and poisons. The models, operating largely free of U.S. government restrictions, patiently answered, issuing step-by-step instructions described by company employees as simple enough for a high school biology student to follow. Biology and terrorism experts later reviewed the exchanges for ChatGPT and judged some as deadly accurate, said people familiar with the matter. Most queries were about concocting poisons, according to OpenAI. OpenAI banned these and other user accounts that asked about how to make poisons and biological weapons, but it didn't alert law enforcement officials. The U.S. has no federal laws requiring AI companies to either restrict or disclose queries about making weapons or formulating plans that pose a safety threat. The absence of mandated safeguards coincides with a rise in queries from users asking AI models how to kill en masse and chatbots responding with credible plans for mass casualty attacks, according to current and former employees at the major AI labs, including OpenAI, as well as policy advisors and researchers who study biological weapons. AI's advancing proficiencies, especially for crafting nefarious biological and cyber-based plans, are alarming senior executives at AI companies and the White House. The world's leading AI labs are grappling with how to prevent or mitigate damage by malevolent users without hampering well-intentioned queries. OpenAI, Anthropic, and other AI companies say they are working closely with the administration on the release of models and have banned users or restricted accounts showing suspicious activity. Hiring defies forecast of AI wipeout by Chip Cutter. America's biggest companies say they might need more people after all. For months, major employers treated hiring as an expensive last resort. Now, a shift is emerging across industries. Companies ranging from railroad giant CSX to Google parent Alphabet have told investors in recent days that they plan to hire to meet growth goals or to seize on emerging technologies. The push to expand headcount, at least modestly, is a reversal from the prevailing corporate messaging during much of the AI era. Major employers largely held back on adding people due to economic uncertainties or a belief that artificial intelligence could shoulder more tasks on the job. But some executives say the cost and limitations of AI now demand that more people be added, Others want to hire people back following layoffs. United approached Delta about a merger by Allison Sider and Andrew Tangel. United Airlines, on the hunt for a mega deal, last year approached Delta Airlines about a merger that would have combined the two most valuable U.S. carriers, according to people familiar with the matter. As part of the pitch, United Chief Executive Scott Kirby made a call to Delta CEO Ed Bastian, some of the people said. Delta leaders discussed the approach and merits of a potential deal as part of preliminary due diligence, people familiar with the matter said. The talks didn't progress, and both companies later moved on from the proposal, they said. The outreach, which hadn't previously been reported, underscores Kirby's appetite for taking big swings in pursuit of his global ambitions for United. His later attempt to engage in merger talks with American Airlines, which American rebuffed, also became public earlier this year. United and Delta are among four giants that have come to dominate the U.S. airline industry after a series of mergers over the past two decades. Industry officials have long believed that any merger between those carriers would be impossible because of antitrust concerns. But business leaders in many industries were hopeful that big deals, even some that would have been unthinkable in the past, might be achievable during the second Trump administration. A merger between United and Delta, two of the world's biggest airlines, would have had wide-ranging implications for airline competition and consumers. It would likely have faced scrutiny from antitrust enforcers and state attorneys general. Deadly attack in Berlin. People gathered Sunday in front of the Brandenburg Gate after a vehicle attack on a Pride festival the previous day left at least one person dead and dozens injured. The suspect was killed Sunday evening by police. A mystery consumes a golf course. Who turned the grass orange? All 18 greens and a practice putting surface at Michigan's course were attacked, by Ryan Felton. Ann Arbor, Michigan. Golfers here have been chipping away at a scandal encircling the University of Michigan's renowned course. It was clearly a communist plot. Then again, maybe it was the handiwork of fans of rivals Ohio State and Michigan State. Jokes aside, Michigan has a mystery on its hands. How did all 18 greens of its beloved track suddenly turn orange? The damage was severe enough that the course temporarily reduced rates for non-university affiliated golfers, according to Michigan staff. The university suspects foul play and said its Division of Public Safety and Security had been dispatched to investigate. No additional details were provided. Leaving the front page, Saudi truce with Yemen weakens further. Back and forth strikes test energy markets as Tehran widens influence on the region. By Feliz Solomon and Salah El-Batadi. Attacks between Saudi Arabia and Houthi rebels in Yemen are escalating, threatening to break a fragile truce that has held for 4 years. A return to all-out war between the Saudis and the Iran-backed militant group would heap more pressure on global energy markets already strained by the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran and Tehran's retaliatory chokehold on the Strait of Hormuz. It could also bring catastrophic consequences to the people of Yemen, where famine took hold when the country's civil war was at its peak. Riyadh has calibrated its responses as the Houthis test their limits. But experts on the conflict say they see little room for de-escalation. The militants are under growing economic pressure, which they blame on a Saudi-enforced blockade of Yemen ports and airspace. Meanwhile, Iran is taking advantage of the situation to inflict pain on the kingdom without attacking it directly. Iran is fanning the flames of this conflict? That's without question. But the Houthis tend to do things when it makes sense for them, said Allison Miner, a former U.S. official on Middle East policy, now at the Atlantic Council think tank. I think we're very close to a resumption of all-out war. I'm not seeing an off-ramp right now. Kim Jong-un is upgrading North Korean spy network, by Dashiell Yoon, Seoul. Kim Jong-un wants his spies to up their game. North Korea is believed to have pulled off some notable intelligence feats over the years. Its 2014 hack of Sony Pictures ballooned into a national security crisis for the U.S. In 2016, Pyongyang's hackers stole U.S. South Korea military plans. The following year, North Korean spies were blamed for orchestrating the assassination of Kim's half-brother in Malaysia. But despite such cases, North Korea is under-equipped in intelligence gathering, lacking an extensive international web of spies and tools, such as a global satellite network. Now Kim wants to address that. In a rare mention of the country's spy program this month, he presided over a meeting that called for radical enhancements to North Korea's military reconnaissance and intelligence capabilities, according to state media. The goal is to better control the threats from potential enemies and gather key information, state media said. India's protesters claim a victory. Education minister agrees to resign as cockroaches seek further changes. By Tripti Lahari and Krishna Pakaral, New Delhi. India's education minister resigned Saturday, handing the country's youth movement a victory and showing the growing heft of a Gen Z movement that began just months ago as online memes. Following the resignation, protest leaders announced they would call off their protest after the government agreed to other key demands, including compensation for students whose families say they took their lives over a botched college entrance exam earlier this year. Today, the students have won, said the Cockroach Janta Party movement, which has been driving the protest in a post on X Saturday. Protesters have been pushing for the resignation of India's Education Minister, Dharmendra Prohan, after this year's undergraduate medical school entrance exam was marred by allegations of cheating. The protests drew thousands to the streets in the capital, presenting a challenge for Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. the Cockroach Janta Party, a youth movement born from a satirical Instagram account, was set up after a top judge referred to unemployed youth as cockroaches and parasites in May, the same month as the medical exam scandal. In a social media post from his hospital bed, 59-year-old activist Sonen Wanchuk, who helped to garner support for the movement with a 26-day hunger strike, posted a picture of himself making a victory sign. He ended his fast on Friday after talks with key government officials in a signal that concessions were coming. A representative for the youth movement said Saturday that protesters presented the government with proposals to reform education and examinations. They said that they will meet to discuss them in a month. The government has also agreed not to pursue police action against protesters, the Cockroach Janta Party said in a social media post. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From the editorial page, abolish the Senate, says the DSA. Democratic socialists want to remove barriers to radical change. The Democratic Socialists of America are gaining strength in the Democratic Party, so it behooves voters to know what they do with political power. We know they want a future without capitalism, as their latest policy document avers. But most Americans may not know they also want to rewrite the U.S. Constitution. The left has long targeted the Electoral College because it thwarts the ability of the most populous states to dominate presidential elections. But in its latest manifesto, Workers Deserve More, the DSA says it wants to replace the president and Supreme Court with an executive and judiciary chosen by and subordinate to Congress. It also wants to abolish the Senate. James Madison, call your office. It's important to understand how radical this is, especially blowing up the Constitution's separation of powers. Letting Congress choose the president means adopting the parliamentary system that prevails in Britain. It would essentially remove the presidential veto power that the founders designed as a check on the legislative passions of the day. Ditto for ending an independent judiciary, which is a check against legislative and executive violation of individual rights. Third world dictators seek to make the judiciary subservient to the ruling party for this reason, as they did in Venezuela, and as Mexico's Morena party is now attempting to do. The left loathes the Senate because it is also a restraint on temporary majorities. The Senate's design, with two members from each state, gives an equal voice to small and large states. This prevents dominance by California, New York, and Texas. And it buttresses the Federalist principles at the core of the Constitution's design, which preserves certain powers to the states as a check on Washington, D.C.'s commandments. The Senate's six-year terms are another check on momentary House majorities elected every 2 years. The founders' original design, that senators be elected by state legislatures has given way to direct election. But the 60-vote filibuster rule has developed as an alternative check on radical change by narrow majorities. Article 5 of the Constitution says, "No state, without its consent, shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate." This means the Senate couldn't be abolished without the consent of every state, assuming the DSA doesn't ignore the Constitution, as some on the left might want to do. But the left's first step would be breaking the filibuster rule. This would let them add Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia as states with 2 senators each. They would also have the votes to restructure the Supreme Court, as Senate Democrats are already promising. Democrats have proposed adding 4 new justices to the court, as well as limiting the kind of cases the justices can hear. The common denominator in all of these DSA proposals is eliminating barriers to rapid, radical change. The socialists want a single branch legislature that can sweep into power in a single election, dominate the president, and neuter the judiciary as a check on that power. With those checks gone, they can impose their agenda that will be nearly impossible to undo. The job of Republicans now, and Democrats who have the guts, is to educate the country about this agenda. Not by doing what President Trump does and call them communist. That general attack won't resonate with young people who don't know what communism is. The political task is to link the DSA to their specific and radical proposals and ask Democrats running for Congress if they agree with abolishing the Senate or neutering the judiciary. Democrats who won't disavow these DSA ideas make themselves fair game to be tied to them in this year's elections. Republicans go for a UAW ride. Congress moves to ban Mercedes vehicles from the U.S. market. Are Mercedes-Benz cars Chinese sleeper cell spies? A bipartisan Senate bill treats the German luxury vehicles as such and would ban them from the U.S. market. This is political rent-seeking in the guise of national security. The Senate Commerce Committee last week advanced a bill that would codify and expand Commerce Department restrictions on Chinese connected software in cars. This is a national security concern, but self-serving union and corporate interest have hijacked the bill. Most new cars are equipped with software that connects to the internet and scoops up data. This can include location data, as well as audio and video recorded inside a car. Manufacturers and their software partners use these internet-connected systems to help drivers, say, by warning about road hazards ahead. It's not paranoid to worry that adversaries could exploit these systems. The Associated Press reported in 2018 that China had required electric vehicle markets operating in that country, including foreign-owned companies like Tesla, to transmit real-time data on drivers for government monitoring. Such concerns spurred the Biden administration to ban the sale of connected vehicles, if their manufacturers or software are controlled by Chinese entities. The regulation provides a process for manufacturers to appeal a ban and mitigate security concerns. The Trump team last month barred new cars from EV maker Polestar, majority owned by the Chinese Zhejiang Geely Holding Company Group and its founder, from the U.S. market. Volvo, which has the same majority owner, won an exemption for unspecified reasons. While political favoritism could bias national security reviews, the Senate bill is more problematic. It would ban manufacturers from selling cars in the U.S. if Chinese investors own more than 15% of shares, unless they get a waiver from regulators. It would also prohibit connected software and hardware, such as battery packs, if they are supplied by Chinese companies or Chinese entities hold more than a 25% equity stake in their developers. The first threshold targets Mercedes, which has two passive Chinese shareholders that together own 19.7% of shares. Commerce Committee Chair Ted Cruz says General Motors pushed for this threshold to hamstring a competitor for its Cadillac model. The United Auto Workers also wants to punish Mercedes for opposing the union at its plant in Alabama. Mercedes employs some 7,500 workers in Alabama and South Carolina. This spring, it announced a $4 billion investment at its Alabama plant. The Senate bill would kill these jobs and investment. Yet it has drawn 32 co-sponsors, including 25 Republicans. As Mr. Cruz mused during the hearing, why do Republicans want to harm GOP-led states? GOP proponents note the bill is supported by U.S. auto companies and workers, by which they mean the UAW, but that betrays its rent-seeking motivation. The House Select Committee on China, which is pushing a companion bill, recently sideswiped Mercedes for opposing the legislation. Quote, all Americans should be watching as this German-based, Chinese-owned company tries to tell U.S. lawmakers how to set the rules for our own country. The real question is why Republicans are carrying water for the UAW, which almost exclusively backs Democrats. Mr. Cruz didn't hold the bill up in committee, but he's wisely pushing to eliminate the bill's arbitrary Chinese equity ownership limit and adopt a standard of Chinese control that is used by the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. This being an election year, there's a risk that Republicans who want to flaunt their anti-China bona fides insist on attaching the bill to a must-pass vehicle like the National Defense Authorization Act. If American workers later lose their jobs, they'll blame someone else. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From the opinion pages, the Saudi nuclear deal invites disaster. Allowing Riyadh to enrich uranium would open the door to proliferation in the Middle East and beyond. By Matthew Kronig and Henry Sokolsky. Critics of the recently announced U.S. nuclear deal with Saudi Arabia let out a sigh of relief when President Trump posted on Truth Social that the deal wouldn't go ahead until Saudi Arabia recognizes Israel and insisted that the agreement permits no enrichment of material. Still, there are serious problems with the agreement, not the least of which is that, despite Mr. Trump's post, it allows for enrichment. The administration and Congress should correct that. Uranium enrichment can make fuel for both nuclear reactors and nuclear weapons. That's why, for the past half century, Washington has never included nuclear fuel making as a part of any of its civilian nuclear agreements with states that lack nuclear weapons. In recent decades, other major nuclear supplier states, including France, Russia, China, Japan, and South Korea, have followed America's example. Washington should continue this policy. The Pentagon recently bombed Iran's nuclear fuel-making plants, providing Saudi Arabia a pathway to build the capacity the U.S. Air Force is raising in Iran gives hypocrisy a bad name. It not only would make it more difficult to get Iran to restrict its own program, but also set a poor example and encourage other nuclear suppliers to misbehave. More important, it's sure to spook Riyadh's neighbors. U.S. negotiators agreed that Iran may, after a moratorium, resume enriching uranium. The U.S.-Saudi deal allows a similar privilege to Riyadh. The U.S. got the United Arab Emirates to agree to forego making nuclear fuel with the caveat that if Washington afforded any neighbor more generous terms, the UAE could renegotiate. Then there are Egypt and Turkey, both building large nuclear plants. U.S. diplomats asked both to forswear making nuclear fuel. Both refused. The Saudi deal, in short, could pour proliferation kerosene on these states' smoldering nuclear ambitions. Energy Secretary Christopher Wright insists the opposite. He says this deal will uphold the highest standards of nuclear safety and nonproliferation. In fact, it represents a new low. The agreement doesn't require Riyadh to adopt the International Atomic Energy Agency's model inspections under what's known as the Additional Protocol. These inspections allow short-notice visits at any time, anywhere. 144 states have already adopted the Additional Protocol. Saudi Arabia has refused. The fear is that it might want to hide something. The Energy Department is quick to insist that it will black box any nuclear fuel-making plant in Saudi Arabia to prevent military diversions. That is magical thinking. No such box has ever been developed, nor has it been explained publicly. That's because it doesn't exist. Saudi nationals couldn't be kept clear of a large nuclear fuel-making plant in Saudi territory. At a minimum, construction and operation of such a black box plant would make it far more difficult to detect Saudi efforts to build a covert facility, possibly with the assistance of its nuclear-armed ally, Pakistan. And black boxing can never protect against sovereign Saudi seizure of what's in the box. Fortunately, the reported deal contains an escape clause. It doesn't promise the immediate transfer of uranium-enriched technology. Rather, it pledges a 2-year study into the concept. But it doesn't take 2 years to figure out that this is a bad idea. Washington shouldn't be in the business of transferring nuclear bomb-making capability to Saudi Arabia or any other country. To make sure it doesn't, Mr. Trump, who relishes getting the best bargain, should renegotiate the deal. Alternatively, Mr. Trump could simply decline to send this bad deal to Congress. If he sends it anyway, lawmakers need to hold hearings and legislate to condition its implementation of making it right. Mr. Kronig is a professor of government and foreign service at Georgetown, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, and author of Exploring the Bomb, Technology Transfer and the Spread of Nuclear Weapons. Mr. Sokolsky is executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center and author of China, Russia, and the Coming Cool War. He served as the Pentagon's deputy for nonproliferation policy 1989 to 93. The Happiness Industrial Complex by Andy Kessler. Happy now? Apparently not. A 2025 Gallup survey showed that only 44% of Americans are very satisfied with their personal lives, a new low after peaks of 59% in 2007 and 65% before the pandemic. Why are we so negative? Harvard runs a human flourishing program, Hard Science, that finds young adults globally are struggling with happiness, relationships, and the meaning of life, even as societal wealth booms. Other surveys suggest that satisfaction peaked in 1990. A recent Psychology Today headline sums it up. Why did Gen Z feel less happy even as society gets richer? If that rings a bell, it's the Easterlin paradox from 1974, which noted that although the rich are happier than the poor, happiness doesn't increase as national income grows over time. Since 1980, our economic output per person has more than doubled after adjusting for inflation. We're all richer, so why aren't we happier? Technology is the usual suspect. Since 2004, Facebook and social media have been blamed. Maybe we aren't happy because others appear happy. Those darn happy Joneses. Did wood-paneled station wagon envy turn into Tesla full self-driving envy? That's bunk. Instead, we have generations trained to be unhappy. Worry warts, negativity brainwashed. Baby boomers were nervous about nukes, especially after ABC scared the neutrons out of us in 1983 with its nuclear winter farce the day after. Now we're told artificial intelligence will ravage humanity like a zombie apocalypse, so let's ban data centers. Add imaginary privilege, carbon footprints, unsustainability, the climate crisis, crippling student loan debt for useless social justice degrees, unaffordability. Yikes, maybe that's why our fertility rate is 1.6. We've scared an entire generation into seeking a self-induced extinction. Another Harvard survey shows young adults under 25 self-reporting anxiety at double the rate of teenagers. Bring on the crystals and woo-woo singing bowls. Unhappiness is a political tactic. Trump derangement syndrome is such an addictive drug that if Donald Trump didn't exist, progressives would have to invent him. Remember Ari Fleischer's reminder that Americans should watch what they say? After a Republican congressman made a bigoted comment about Arabs in the wake of September 11th? Many words are now taboo, and there's an entire new anxiety-inducing vocabulary, unhoused, undocumented, unequal, unbelievable. Generation Z has been trained to be offended, claim victimhood, and feel unhappy. In the Netflix comedy Big Mistakes, the character played by baby boomer Laurie Metcalf asks her Gen Z daughter, "How can your generation be offended by anything when you're offended by everything? I never had time to be offended." She adds, "There was no such thing as self-care back then. A strong woman was every woman who got the job done and had a minute at the end of the day for a glass of red wine." Now many of our miseducated youth, little Lululemons, are pining for socialism to make them happy again. The joke's on them. Were the Soviet proletariat happy? Sure, until the vodka ran out. No matter the happiness heroes wearing Bernie beanies, Zoran Mandani and his chosen flunkies have arrived promising freebies. Socialism is a fool's paradise. I doubt the Easterlin paradox is true, finding happiness in economics. Most paradoxes are flawed and prove nothing. Plus, there's a measurement problem. How can you even gauge unquantifiable happiness? It depends on the respondent's mood when asked, and even the questions, "Are you happy?" versus "What makes you happy?" Best to ignore happiness surveys like the World Happiness Report or mushy indexes like Gross National Happiness. It seems like there's a happiness industrial complex raising expectations. Happy hour, happy meal, happy camper, happy as a clam, happy trails, happy wife, happy life. Don't worry, be happy, the happiest place on earth. Wait, as society gets richer, we have it so good, but the ridiculous cost slaps that grin right off our faces. Another paradox, happiness comes from within, not via slogans. And me, I'm usually a happy guy. Family, friends, chocolate ice cream, daily snarks. Meanwhile, we've created a chunk of a generation that is happy only when complaining. That makes me sad. Have they lost even the pursuit of happiness? I asked Mel Robbins, a best-selling author and personal growth expert, for help. She told me, "I boil happiness down to let them and let me. The more you spend trying to control what you can't, the less happy you become. Stop controlling others' behavior and put your energy back where happiness is actually created, in your own choices, your own relationships, and your own life. Yes, ignore the obsessively negative Nickies and Debbie Downers and be your own happiness-pursuing mirth maker. And stop answering